our job is to not only understand prophecy, but to actually bring it to people in a tangible way where they can look at the world, see that the scriptures have said that this is going to happen, that the scriptures are divine, and that we're supposed to do something about it.
People probably can't even imagine something like that coming to North America. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure in Europe it wasn't well received right at the start either. Mm-hmm. As things progress more and more and more, they're forcing you to make this shift.
I just want to pause, and I highlighted the all because there are people who think they can sit on the sidelines for this thing.
Yes.
And they think, well, I'm not going to have to make a choice, and I'm not going to have to.
Yeah.
It's just not possible. All will have to make a choice.
Yep.
All will be involved.
What you're saying is that it's reasonable that they can tell you when you're allowed to leave a certain area.
Yeah.
That's how people are getting so brainwashed. Oh, that sounds reasonable. And then they'll add another clause. Oh, that sounds reasonable. That sounds reasonable. And they just work you down the thing until you're a frog that is totally cooked.
Yeah. And what I'm hoping people see is that this fourth industrial revolution is real. Since the start of 2020, it's really begun. It got under the skin with the treatments, and now we're seeing it has been accelerated. Most people think that it was just about the health treatments, but we see there's actually like plans within plans.
Yeah.
And that there's a broader push to digitize the whole world.
Hi everyone, it's the end of the year, and I want to remind you that Amazing Discoveries is 100% donation based. We haven't quite reached our annual operating budget, and it's your support that enables us to produce projects like Truth Matters or other Amazing Discoveries content. If you've been blessed by Amazing Discoveries productions, then I would encourage you to prayerfully consider supporting so that we can continue producing videos that can reach the entire world with the three angels' messages. God bless and enjoy the episode.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Truth Matters. I'm Mackenzie Drebet, and with me we have Matt Shaunche, as always. Today we're going to be covering a topic about the no buy, no sell. We have mentioned this previously, and we're going to be covering some ways that this will actually or could take place, and also about the CBDC. So Matt has been doing a lot of research into this area. We had an interview actually at ASI where we touched a little bit on this mm-hmm. with one of our guests.
Yeah, Eva Tompkins. So if you guys want to check that out, that was from ASI. So I think it might be under our live tab. So if you're looking for that video, go to the live tab. It's an interesting intro to what we're going to be talking about, because a lot of people talk about this time where we have this mark of the beast, a term that's used by a lot of people but don't often apply it correctly. And that same mark comes at a time where the Bible is describing that people, there's a group of people that won't be able to buy or sell.
Yeah.
And for me, for a long time, I wondered, like, how could this be possible if somebody can just hand cash or money to somebody else in a private transaction? It seems like you'd be able to skirt that, but the Bible clearly shows that, like, there's a group of people that can participate and there's a group of people that can't. Yeah. And so there's been some pretty major developments. Maybe some people have heard some about these things, whether it's the blockchain technology, whether it's FedNow or some variation of it within this whole ecosystem of stuff. But it's very clear that a change is coming. And so what we're going to try to do, it's a bit different maybe than some of the other episodes we've done before, because it's like almost like trying to explain the internet before the internet happened.
Uh-huh.
So to explain why the internet could be, you know, furthering an agenda, it's you have to understand what it is first, and how does it fit within this whole structure of power and whose priorities are being put at the top. And so hopefully these next couple episodes, we can really break down for people what's happening, what it means, how it works, And then in the future, we'll dive deeper in to the roles like people like, say, Elon Musk and Jared Kushner and Peter Thiel and Sam Altman and George Soros. Like, how do these individuals play? Lucius Trust is involved.
Some of these heroes or anti-heroes in the
Where do they fall in the scope of things? Do we even know some of the names? You know, sometimes you get focused on names like Elon Musk. You don't even realize there's a guy like Peter Thiel behind there. And he's just as powerful, just as rich. And they all come from the same place. I mean, Elon and Peter started PayPal together.
And these names are some guys that we're going to cover in the next couple of episodes so that people are aware of who these guys are, what their roles are. And then in the future, because this is more to dissect kind of the inner workings of what's coming and what we should do, we'll talk about in later episodes as well.
Yeah, and results like in respect to like country living, how people can actually
how can you avoid this system?
Yeah, do your best to mitigate by God's grace through prayer and faith, mitigate what these things may be.
Yeah,
and so our goal, while it's not as typical as like going into just end time Bible prophecy and looking at dragon, beast, false prophet, we're just trying to pull apart so people can see, especially for those people who don't maybe believe some of this stuff, that like a no buy, no sell system is definitely coming.
Yeah,
and we even saw during some of the health crisis stuff, people being debanked for their views, people having bank accounts frozen for supporting certain things. And before you know it, like the conditions, if you just had the right technology set up, you could make this happen. And there has been a major breakthrough in the technology and the adoption of it, which then leads us to our, the place where we're at our no buy, no sell system. So we're going to look at the development of the final financial system for the world. And as we get into this, you know, we only are covering this because there is a prophecy about no buy, no sell. And there are people who sometimes say, well, are we even supposed to understand prophecy? Well, the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. And we see in Ezekiel, as we kind of looked at in the previous episodes, it says that we are supposed to warn people, thou shalt hear the words at my mouth and warn them from me. So our job is to not only understand prophecy, but to actually bring it to people in a tangible way where they can look at the world, see that the scriptures have said that this is going to happen, that the scriptures are divine, and that we're supposed to do something about it.
And the first chapter and the first verse in Revelation is, this is a revelation of Jesus Christ. And some people in their Bibles, it says the revelation of John the Divine or St. John the Divine or something like this. It wasn't John's revelation. It was Christ's revelation to John. Yeah. It was a revealing of the things going to happen so that we can know. This isn't a sealed book. This is an open book.
Yeah. And it says, blessed is that who reads and understands. So,
exactly.
We're supposed to understand, and we're going to do our best to help people in this. Also, when you're looking at the world today, I mean, how many doctrines are there about what's going on and why? Even if from the Christian perspective, you can get, as we looked at from the evangelical perspective in previous episodes, you can get all sorts of different answers. Or if you're a Buddhist or a Hindu or whatever it is.
Innumerable.
Innumerable. And we see here, there are many doctrines in the world. There is many a religion current that numbers its thousands and tens of thousands. But there is but one that bears the superscription and the stamp of God. There is a religion of man, a religion of God. Yeah. We must have our souls riveted to the eternal rock. So it's like we really need to realize that there aren't as many doctrines as it seems. It's either God's way or man's way. And that's why understanding the scriptures and what they say is so important. So that way we can understand what God's prescribed way is and we can follow that. Now, as we kind of uncover things, this no buy, no sell system, when does it actually happen? It happens towards the end of time.
End of time, and we are in the end of time right now.
Yeah, and we've known basically since 1798, we're in the time of the end. And so as we kind of look at a final no buy, no sell system, let's look at the conditions of what the end of the world is like, because there are people pitching that a utopia is coming, either a secular utopia, or there's people that say a religious millennium is going to happen here on Earth as part of the 1,000 years. But I'd like to just quickly go through what the Bible says the conditions are at the end. It says, but as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. And what was it like in the days of Noah?
Well, this is a very important point that people should study, because this is words that Jesus is saying to his people. But as the days of Noah were, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. And what was it like? People are eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage. And none of these are necessarily bad things. It doesn't say what they were drinking. Mm-hmm. But it also says that the people were extremely wicked, that they were perverting everything that God had created, mm-hmm. and that the wickedness abounded. You have the verse here, Genesis 6, verse 5. Wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually.
Yeah.
So this isn't look like a good situation.
No, and it shows the direction things are going. As Jesus, his coming comes closer, where do the hearts of men's and their imaginations get more and more evil?
Well, what does the Bible say? Your heart is deceitfully wicked above all else. Mm-hmm. Why? Because we have this fallen nature, and we are trying to follow what God is wanting. But these people before Noah's day, there was only 8 people that were saved in this situation.
Yeah.
So there was an extreme amount of wickedness, and we're supposed to see that wickedness again, and that wickedness normalized.
Yeah, as the days of Noah were. It's something that really needs to resonate in people's mind. And here, let's just kind of read what those conditions were like. It says, Christ continues pointing out the condition of the world at his coming. As the days of Noah were, so also the coming of the Son of Man shall be. Christ does not here bring to view a temporal millennium or a millennium happening here on earth, a 1,000 years in which all are to prepare for eternity. He tells that as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be when the Son of Man comes again. How was it in Noah's day? God saw that the wickedness was great in the earth. It presents no flattering signs of temporal millennium. The transgressors of God's law are filling the earth with wickedness. You know, we looked at what Pope Francis said. He's like, oh, the climate injustice and the social injustice. No, the injustice is what man is doing in result of sin. That is what's killing the world. That's what's killing individuals and hearts and minds. And we see that as we get closer, this is going to become, the transgression is going to get worse.
And that's exactly what we covered last time. Is we referenced that this millennium, this isn't a millennium of peace that we're going to be seeing here on earth.
Right.
So that's why if people just read what Jesus said, it is going to be as the days of Noah. We would see very clearly that that type is not a millennium of peace.
No.
That it is all chaos that we will see.
Yeah. And then the millennium, when Christ comes, is people will be taken with him to heaven for the 1,000 years. So anybody saying that they've come here and set up a millennium here is a false teacher or even a false Christ. So let's look at where we see this no buy, no sell in the Bible. We see it's in Revelation 13, a chapter we cover a whole lot because so much of it relates to what's coming in the end of time and the specific power that's going to be the catalyst to getting all this done, which we've looked at time and time again as American Protestantism being the main catalyst to allowing this system to occur. So let's just go through and see if we can read through and get the context and understand what the conditions are for this no buy, no sell system. It says, and he, American Protestantism, had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. So it's kind of a wordy way of saying when this unified church-state system is brought up, anybody who doesn't participate in this unified church-state system and its principles, well, they're going to be killed.
Yep.
And we saw this with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I should give their proper Hebrew names as
Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah.
Yes, because I know Pastor Skeet always says, stop referring to them in the Babylonian and give them their proper names. So thank you for that. That we saw this already happen before, haven't we?
Yes.
Because there's nothing new under the sun. And so when people want to understand kind of what this might look like, go reread that story of what they went through. They set up a literal image. Yep. Everyone was meant to bow down. And if you didn't bow down to the image, you were literally killed.
It's basically word for word, verse 15.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we look at that, if we read, I believe it's in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11, it says, all of these things are written for those who the ends of the world have come. So all the stories in the Bible are actually types that we look at to see what the end of the world is going to be. So here we have an image going to be set up.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be killed if you don't worship it.
Mm-hmm.
There, in Daniel, we've seen that there was an image set up that they would be killed. But the good news part of that story is that what did those three young men do when the king said, you have to bow down or die? Their response.
Yeah, and they said, I'm not even going to be careful in my response. We know who we're serving, and we're not going to serve you. And God can save us if he wants to.
Yep.
But even if he doesn't, let it be known that we did not bow down to your image.
And that's what, when we study really the prophecies at the end, these young men were confident God would save them. And we should be confident, too, that God can protect us. We should have that same confidence that God is out for our best interest.
Yeah.
And that he's stronger than all of these world elite, all the system, everything that's going to be going exactly. against. So as we go down, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but so verse 16, and he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads.
Now, I just want to pause, and I highlighted the all because there are people who think they can sit on the sidelines for this thing.
Yes.
And they think, well, I'm not going to have to make a choice, and I'm not going to have to.
Yeah.
It's just not possible. All will have to make a choice.
Yep.
All will be involved. Either you are in the Babylonian story, they're either kneeling or you're standing.
Yep.
There's one or the other. And so we see there's
You can't kneel down and tie your shoe.
No. It's going to be part of your personal choice, either you're serving for or against. And then we see, continuing on, that and that no man might buy or sell.
Yeah.
So here's the principle of what we're talking about, this no buy, no sell system. Save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name before all these, they shall lay their hands on you and persecute you. So before the mark of the beast happens, before this no buy, no sell system happens, it's saying, but before all these things, they're going to persecute you. And we saw in previous episodes that the American Protestant daughters are going to do what the mother did and persecute. So there will even be an element of persecution before this even comes out, delivering you up to synagogues and into prisons, being brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake.
Now, I want to pause there again. Because there's a couple elements that we have to, you know, when we're studying, we can't miss one word.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have time to go through every single word here. But it references this no buy, no sell, which is exactly what we're talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, but before this, then, you know, in prison, all of these things. So as this system keeps building, we're going to see a progression. But the encouraging thing about this progression is that there is a progression. And the way that I look at it is, okay, they tried to put you in prison, but obviously it didn't work. So they have to do no buy, no sell. Well, that didn't work because these people knew ahead of time, they read the Bible, and they are ready for that. So now they're going to have to up the ante again and say, we need a death decree to take these people out because the rest didn't work. And at that point, we know that God is going to protect us. That's what it says throughout the whole Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It says this time of Jacob's trouble, what's called during this death decree period, but God will deliver you out of this. And so we have this promise that as long as we're faithful, some people think, you know what, if I can just stay away from all this, if I can stay away from even, you know, being associated with the good people, then it'll be easier for me. Because if I don't know this, if I don't, you know, push against the system, I don't even want to be around people who are pushing against the system. But no, God's blessing is on you when you will honor him. And I don't mean pushing against the system in an aggressive way.
Right.
I just mean...
just preaching the truth, the same that it's always been.
And not letting yourself compromise.
Right. Yeah, and when you look at the apostles, what did they do then? They kept throwing them in prison and had to let them go.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they wouldn't let them go, the shackles would fall off of
them.
And
they'd be,
so it's like we can't shy away, but we can't do anything without the Spirit of Christ with us. So like it's not an evil uprising and getting all the bad guys. It's it's praying for them, asking for their forgiveness on their behalf because who knows who's praying for these people? Maybe no one is.
Yeah.
So it's our job to do everything with the Spirit of Christ, but we know that this is coming. we know the power that is going to at least initiate it before, you know, maybe it goes to the rest of the world, but that a no-buy, no-sell system is coming. And we see Spirit of Prophecy confirms this. The time is coming when we cannot sell at any price. The decree will soon go forth, prohibiting men to buy or sell of any man save him that hath the mark of the beast. And that's consistent with Scripture.
And we know we don't want the mark of the beast.
Correct.
So we want to be one of those who can't buy and sell.
Yes. It's a blessing to not be able to buy or sell in the end, because it means you're doing something right.
Yeah.
It also means you're putting all your trust into God, because our very food sources may be questioned. So we really have to use this time, the day of the Lord's preparation, to get our hearts and minds ready to totally trust God. And, you know, it's easy to say it, but I think God's all going to take us through what we need to be ready for this if we ask him for help. It says, religious powers aligned to heaven by profession and claiming to have the characteristics of the Lamb will show by their acts that they have the heart of a dragon and they are instigated and controlled by Satan. Time is coming when God's people will feel the hand of persecution because they kept the holy seventh day.
Yeah.
So again, consistent with what we've talked about from the beginning, that this religious, like we're the good guys, this new revival of conservatism is going to say that they have, you know, by our acts, we're the good guys, but really they're working with Satan and they won't speak according to the word.
And that's where you have to, when studying this, what's the mark of the beast? What is the seal of God? Because you have these two groups. You have Revelation 7 and Revelation 14, which is this group that is the seal of God. And you have another group that has the mark of the beast. There's only these two groups, and you have to pick one. You can't decide to be in the middle, like you said.
Yeah.
And knowing what that seal and what that mark is the critical aspect so that you can make the proper decision.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before.
Yeah, and if you want to go back and look at our Sabbath Sunday, where did Sunday come from? And we're going to wrap it up with a third episode at some point. But what we're looking at is where we sit today. We can buy and sell. Soon, there will be no buying and selling for this group of people. And so now we're going to kind of look at what this possible structure looks like. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean every aspect of what we're looking at here today will come to fruition? Not necessarily, because we just in the previous couple episodes looked at how there's this Hegelianism going on.
Yeah.
There's pushback on certain things, but we saw also in the pushback there in alignment on other things. So what we're going to try to do is look at what the information we have today, how this no buy, no sell system could be coming to fruition, what they're saying it can do and how it can be used, and whether it gets to that point or not, that what's certain is this technological shift in being able to basically monitor every transaction and control it, it seems to be coming no matter what.
Yeah.
And so what we're going to try to do is use this chart. This couple episodes, we'll be going through this chart and kind of giving some context for people who have maybe never heard of this or heard parts of it, and give it a proper place within the larger ecosystem of what's happening. And we'll start from like a top down. So we know the end result. End result is a no buy, no sell system. But in order to get to that system from where we are today, there needs to be a transformation, a shift. And we've heard the narrative coming from these global organizations that's called the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And we can say that that equals this digital transformation. So to have this Fourth Industrial Revolution, we've got to shift. This digital transformation needs to happen for this Fourth Industrial Revolution to occur.
And as we're going through this, we'll try and break it down in sections. It looks like a lot of information here. It's not as confusing as your first glance.
Yeah.
And we'll get the guys to, you know, help with putting some circles
some
around
highlights.
The areas that we're trying to focus on.
And right now we're going to focus on the part right below the no buy, no sell. And we see that let's first start by proving that there's this Fourth Industrial Revolution coming, and that things like the health crisis, the Russian-Ukraine war, the Israel-Palestine conflict, hyperinflation, the banking crisis, and what could be a cyber pandemic on the horizon. These are all really tools to accelerate this transformation. And we have some very interesting documentation, especially on the Russian-Ukraine war, about how maybe this was pre-planned to accelerate the Ukraine's role in becoming smart cities, digital identifications, and blockchain technology to rebuild what happens from this war, and I wouldn't be surprised if the same thing happens with Israel and Palestine. So let's first start by looking at how this fourth industrial revolution was impacted by the health crisis that we saw.
And you see, the difference of this fourth industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing. It changes you. If you take a genetic editing, just as an example, it's you who are changed. Yeah. And of course, this has a big impact on your identity.
COVID-19, if anything, has accelerated this ongoing industrial revolution. If COVID had happened even 10 years ago, we could not have imagined moving entire companies, schools, and government offices so fast online.
Okay. Today. Okay. So I want to pause there for a second. He just said that the fourth industrial revolution isn't just changing your surroundings, it's changing you because you're taking genetic editing. Mm-hmm. And then says that the health crisis, if it happened, you know, a decade earlier, they wouldn't have had the ability to bring all these people online. That's a very strange thing. I find that very strange.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when you think about what was in the chemistry was in some of the health crisis treatments, there is genetic editing going on because your body has to now produce this protein that it's now coded to do.
Yep.
So this is not conspiracy. There's literally over a billion people that have received this treatment, and it is playing in the exact alignment with what they're talking about. So this is not a far-fetched crazy conspiracy. We have a real-world use case of them going under the skin. And what was in that, at least to our knowledge, we can even tell that there was genetic editing happening there.
And when we did the Noah Harari video, he talked about this as well.
Yes.
And the scary part about that is this will be introduced more and more and more, this genetic editing to people. And what it does is it makes you copyrightable because you're no longer a natural person anymore. You are edited, you're genetically modified, and anything that's genetically modified is patentable and ownable. So when we look at GMOs, and I know I'm digressing a little, but people should take a look into this. The reason that GMOs are so profitable is because there's ownership behind it. You can't have ownership to a regular seed. Someone can take it, they can go reproduce it, they can go sell it, there's no way to control that. But with the GMOs, it's patented. You can get sued, you can get fined, you're not allowed to do this. I know farmers, because I'm from Saskatchewan, who had beautiful self-seed crops, but it was genetically altered Monsanto seed. And these guys keep track of everything. So they came in and they said, I'm sorry, that wasn't from our seed. That was your seed or self-seed, whatever the circumstances, you have to plow in all of your fields. You're not allowed to receive a crop because you did not follow the proper protocol. So that's literally what can take place.
Wow.
And if you take genetic mutation, then they can start claiming you as their property and integrate you into this online. How are they bringing you online?
Mm-hmm.
So these are all like intricate code words
that
he's saying here.
And part of this fourth industrial revolution, which they said, is going to go under your skin and is going to be part of a broader surveillance effort.
Today, that is a reality. The fourth industrial revolution has become a reality.
What we have seen throughout the euro area and in Europe in general is a dwindling use of cash. And this has been certainly accelerated by COVID. It has been tempered a bit during the terrible invasion of Russia against Ukraine because there was suddenly a little appetite for cash yet again. But the general trend is less use of cash and more use of digital payments.
So I'll just say now, both her and Klaus Schwab, this is Christine Lagarde. She's now head of the European Central Bank. She used to be in charge of the International Monetary Fund. Now, I have other videos of her that we're going to look at later where she talks about how she's an occultist. And she talks about how it's the number 7 is a magical number in occultism. And it's on video. She's giving it at a press conference. Then she shows up to one of the central bank meetings because she meets with Jerome Powell and several of the other heads of central banks around the world wearing a full outfit with owls all over it. And we see the owl is connects back to Bohemian Grove.
Yeah.
Again, these are high occultists, and they even say as much. I didn't include these in this round of video, but these people are telling us that COVID acted as the accelerant towards this digital payment infrastructure.
Now we have in Europe this threshold above 1,000 euros, you cannot pay cash. If you do, you are on the gray market. So you take your risk. You get caught, you are fined, or you go in jail.
So stop there for a second. Right there, people probably can't even imagine something like that coming to North America, and I'm sure in Europe it wasn't well received right at the start either. Mm-hmm. As things progress more and more and more, they're forcing you to make this shift. It's not that it'll be, you know, we can decide one or the other. No, and it's going to be progressive. So they entice you to feel like it's not that bad. A good example of that is the 15-minute cities. Mm-hmm. And now they're what's the new term they're using for that instead of 15-minute cities?
I just know smart cities.
Smart cities.
Yeah.
So they say, okay, you're allowed to stay in your area for X amount of time. You can leave for X amount of days a year. And people are like, oh, that sounds reasonable. But what you're saying is that it's reasonable that they can tell you when you're allowed to leave a certain area.
Yeah.
That's how people are getting so brainwashed. Oh, that sounds reasonable. And then they'll add another clause. Oh, that sounds reasonable. That sounds reasonable. And they just work you down the thing until you're a frog that is totally cooked.
Yeah. Yep. That's how you boil them, you know, and just raise the temperature slowly. In Australia, many of the banks have stopped accepting cash. And so I've even seen some sprinkled throughout the states for various reasons and circumstances where they're just not accepting cash anymore.
And she referenced Ukraine and Russia's situation.
Yeah.
And people were switching from cash because they couldn't go out, all this, and they were just doing everything digitally. Mm-hmm. And it made this huge push. And we're going to take a look more at that.
Yeah, and blockchain is going to play a huge role in the redevelopment of the Ukraine effort, which we'll look at in a different episode.
Very clear. We have seen a decline of 72% to 59% in terms of use of cash. And the digital payment have virtually tripled during that same period of time. So everything is going digital. People are clearly expressing a preference for it, and there is no reason why we, as a central bank, should not be exploring also the reason why digital cash can be of good use.
I mean, COVID makes it accelerates the process of digitalization and automatization. It legitimizes the deployment of mass surveillance, and it makes surveillance go under your skin.
And I have to say, in my memory, you were one of the most engaged and hardest working participants here at the annual meeting. I
just wanted to make note that this was in 2016. This is before he's president. But it just goes to show, and I wanted to add this clip because people think, oh, it's just globalism. It's just over there. But we see Biden, because this is really a papal agenda, even Klaus Schwab wrote in one of his books how he was so impacted by a Catholic priest as a young boy and how it shaped his worldview. And we see that this is more less of a World Economic Forum thing and more of like a papacy Jesuit order thing. Yep. And that Joe Biden has been working, as Schwab said, harder than anyone else at these meetings. I think it's just very insightful to show that America is as entrenched in this at this stage as possible. Now, we'll see if Project 2025, the Hegelian side of this, has its way. But we see that the inroads are very deep with this whole fourth industrial revolution.
I watched you in the morning up to midnight sometimes, one engagement after the other one.
Dr. Schwab, I'm flattered you'd ask me to keynote. There's an expression in my old neighborhood back in the United States. This may be above my pay grade. It's not above yours, though. You've written extensively.
Pause for a second. That's a quite the statement.
Yeah.
That this is above his pay grade, but it's not above Klaus Schwab's pay grade.
And what's interesting is Biden recently, he's not been doing well on his public speaking. He's making a lot of blunders and looking really bad. When he was walking off stage recently, when asked about the House Speaker situation, which we covered in the previous episode, they said, what are your thoughts on the next speaker? And he just turns around with the creepiest smile and like stares at the audience for a second and says, that's above my mumbles, really. That's above my pay grade, and just wanders off. And it like makes you wonder, this is before he was president.
Yeah.
But now he's saying this stuff in 2023 as president. Of course, I'm not sure how much the guy's all really there. And he's using the same language. This is above my pay grade. He really likes this phrase. But when he's saying that as the president of the United States, and that's supposed to be top of the food chain, it makes you wonder, how is it above his pay grade when he's supposed to be at the top?
On the topic that you've asked me to speak to, mastering the fourth industrial revolution.
Well, that was quite something.
Yeah. I would say so. And what I'm hoping people see is that this fourth industrial revolution is real. Since the start of 2020, it's really begun. It got under the skin with the treatments, and now we're seeing it has been accelerated. Most people think that it was just about the health treatments, but we see there's actually like plans within plans, and that there's a broader push to digitize the whole world. Now, the question is, digitize it to what? This is what takes us to our next piece. What do they want to transition us into? We see there's a technological aspect, but what is the framework? Is there something identifiable that we can actually look at and say, what are they trying to do? And I believe that's where we see the economy of Francesco come in. Now, just to give a quick summation of what that is, the economy of Francesco is a term to describe a financial system and system of thought that stems from the encyclical Laudato Si. So when those principles are enacted in the world, it forms this system called the economy of Francis or the economy of Francesco. And when you're dealing with a papal encyclical, well, then the authority that everyone's following is the one who authored the paper. That would be Pope Francis. And really, because Pope Francis is the very first Jesuit pope in history, you also have to consider that the Jesuit order is involved. And because Vatican Bank is part of this, and this is all about finances and technology, the Vatican Bank is also involved. And so as we're looking at how this structure works, if this fourth industrial revolution is to move us to this economy of Francis, what is that economy of Francis or Francesco? Let's take a quick look.
And you have to remember that these encyclicals aren't just, you know, nice thoughts.
Yeah.
These are supposed to be like words that are divinely inspired.
Right.
These are supposed to be things that are drastically implemented, that they think are said, if you could say, like ex cathedra, this is God's given message that needs to be said.
Yeah, I think encyclicals are one of the highest forms of papal writings you can get. So it's not just some throwaway document of an opinion piece. And so as we look at this, the first thing we need to establish after seeing, okay, there's an industrial revolution coming, well, what is it? And what we see is Francis has spent a lot of time talking about how the financial markets and specifically capitalism are destroying the earth and it's a broken system. It literally, there's a book called This Economy Kills, Pope Francis on Capitalism and Social Justice. And it says, Pope Francis says that the coronavirus pandemic has proven that the, quote, magic theories of market capitalism have failed and that the world needs a new type of politics that promotes dialogue and solidarity. You know, when we looked at the Abraham Accords in the previous one, this is all about dialogue and solidarity. Yep. So here's the idea is to unify. And this economy that which has made the envy of most of the world, this place where you can have the American dream, someone from another country can come and have a good life in the middle class, where most countries don't even have real middle classes, especially historically. America was very unique in that it had this prosperous middle class. You didn't have to be abstract poor or obscenely rich. You could have a good life in this system. And Pope Francis says that system's broken. And what he wants to change it to is something called inclusive capitalism. And there's actually a website from the Vatican called inclusivecapitalism.com. And you can go there and see all these organizations from all around the world that's saying, yes, Pope Francis, we do need to change this economy. We do. We're going to enact these principles of Laudato Si through this economy of Francesco. And it says inclusive capitalism that leaves no one behind, that discards none of our brothers and sisters, is a noble aspiration worthy of our best efforts. So again, it sounds like nice, but when you look under the hood, it ends up with this.
Yeah.
Inclusive capitalism is the same thing as the UN goal of 2030, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy.
It's really communism.
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh, let's leave no one behind, but no one should also get ahead.
Right.
So you have no say. You own nothing, we'll give you what you need, what we determine you need.
Right.
We talked about this in the book 2052.
Yep.
And you'll be happy.
Yep. And I want people to really associate inclusive capitalism equals you'll own nothing and you'll be happy.
Yeah.
Because this is the religious side. This is the civil side. It's church and state. And so we see the ideology is one and the same. And the way they're attacking it is by saying this economic system is broken. It says we cannot live with the economic patterns that come from the liberals and the Enlightenment. Nor can we live with an economic pattern that comes from communism. So he's kind of pinning these two ideologies. He says, no, we scrap all that. We need a Christian economy. But again, when we define what Christianity is, well, there's two main versions. There's Protestantism and Catholicism, and then you have the Orthodox stuff. But generally, when he's saying Christianity as the Pope, whose version of Christianity is he talking about?
Catholicism.
It's very clearly Catholicism. It's certainly not Protestantism. So when we're saying, what is this Christian model? It's the adoption of Catholic social teaching into the economic model. And there's actually a document put together that we have a number of in-depth slides on. That's not what this these couple episodes are for. We're just trying to build the frame of the house so we can fill the house in later. But there's an actual document that breaks down what integral ecology means. It's kind of like the Project 2025 document, but for the economy of Francis,
yeah.
Where it goes through the practical steps that people can have on the local level that can make these changes and implement them to make this new system. But when you look at it, it's really just put in the mind that the economy of Francis is centralized religious control. And when you look at what the suggestions are and what to change in there, just give people an idea. What's in the document? A new economic model, a new educational model, a new technology model, taxation model, new production of goods, distribution of goods model, a global governance model, and a means to track and monitor absolutely everything. Now, I'll give one example of what is in this document, and it's an example about carbon farming. Have you heard of carbon farming before?
Yes.
Yeah.
Carbon farming is something that is going to be utilized a lot more by bigger companies.
Yeah. So essentially what they've created, the whole answer for fixing climate change is taxation. And they're going to create the new item to tax is carbon. Because everything has some kind of carbon impact, they now have built this new marketplace based on carbon. And so in this document, it talks about carbon farming.
Which is funny because it's not something that the average person can measure at all.
No.
So it's abstract again.
Yeah.
These 0.5 degrees, 1.5.
Exactly. Arbitrary thresholds that just they're not really set in place based on anything. They're just there as this like kind of magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the carbon fits into that model very nicely. And what you have is in this document, it's saying, okay, carbon farming. Imagine you've got 100 acres of land that normally you produce a bunch of food. It's a working active. But with that, you get penalized for the amount of carbon it takes to produce that food. But if you leave your land empty, you will get credits because you have not used up this carbon and you have all this land. Now you have additional carbon credits. Well, in this new marketplace, there are companies and businesses that are big carbon users, and they are going to have to go to this new carbon markets to buy carbon credits. So in this document, it lays out in detail what a carbon credits market would look like. And essentially, it's going to pin food production against economic viability. And so you have these companies coming to you, the farmer with 100 acres, and giving you an insane price for each one of your carbon credits that actually makes producing food less economically viable than just leaving the land completely empty.
Yeah.
I mean,
and this plays into the ESG score that are given to companies, given to people, given, it's basically social credit score.
Yep.
And you have companies like BlackRock, which we're going to talk about, who have a very high ESG score, very good. Mm-hmm. And another thing that people might not know, you can't even get an Academy Award for a movie or motion picture without a high enough ESG score. So if you have a film, you don't have enough of what they require, which is on all sorts of different, I would say, like woke facets.
Woke ideologies, yeah.
You can't even get nominated.
Yeah.
So this is being pushed in many areas. It's pushing people to not farm. And we talked about this before in other areas even, where farmers are getting paid out to not farm, mm-hmm. or they're getting penalized if they do farm. Oh, you're going to lose your insurance. You're going to lose this. You're not going to be able to do this.
Yep.
You know, we are, and it's pushing us towards this same system, these ESGs, the carbon credits, being able to sell those, and the other bigger companies that are actually producing more carbon, I use that very loosely.
Yes, in this framework. That
in this framework.
Made up, yeah.
Has a better credit score than someone who is producing food or hay or produce that is literally sucking all the carbon out of the air.
Right.
Because that's what plants do.
Yeah. It's funny that one of the biggest carbon removal plants in the world is being built in the United States. And I'm just like, or you could just plant a bunch of trees.
Yeah.
But they don't go that route. They don't go the natural route. They make things that take petroleum gas to run to pull the stuff out of the air. It's just hypocrisy.
You know, the crazy thing is, if you look at the amount of carbon used by plants, now it's actually dangerous to have too low of carbon. Mm-hmm. And this is something that everybody can look into. If the carbon levels decrease too much, all life dies.
Yeah.
So it's very deceptive the way that they're talking about this. They were doing some studies in Australia. You can do this with North America. You can do this with any country. Go to these countries. Calculate the average usage of carbon for a tree and it pulls out of the air and transfers into oxygen. In Australia, just the trees that they have there gives enough carbon usage to offset everything done in the country of Australia. That's only the trees. That's not including grass. That's not including bushes. That's not including, you know, any of the other produce that's grown there. And this is like a huge thing that all these countries are actually like carbon neutral or carbon negative because, and one big one is Canada. Canada statistically produces enough oxygen for around a third of the entire globe. So the fact that we're pushing things so hard doesn't even make sense biologically, mathematically, scientifically, all these words that these guys are using. That Kerry was using.
Yeah.
And that's why we have to see past some of these things. And we understand that it's an abstract, arbitrary factor that they're putting in here. Mm-hmm. But people are really buying into this.
They sure are. And we also see Project 2025, which we covered, is like pushing against this. So really what we're looking at is we don't know where the dust will settle, but we know that the underlying technology and the same motivations towards worship and Sunday and what Satan really wants, it is all going, and a no-buy, no-sell system. That's where all of this is going. The level of which some of these things are implemented, and we don't know exactly, but we can know that the underlying technology is going to be used for control, surveillance, and to allow a no-buy, no-sell system to occur. And that a lot of the policies around the world they're based in hypocrisy. It don't even make sense. But in order for them to even transition this whole thing, they say we basically need a financial crisis. And we're going to hear them talking about the new financial rails that they're going to build and how they need a crisis in order to get us there.
Don't let a good crisis go to waste.
And let's manufacture one if we need to make things happen faster, which is what we've seen since the start of 2020. They've kind of lined up crisis after crisis to really accelerate some of these things. So let's take a look at this next video.
What we have to confront is a deep, systemic, and structural restructuring of our world. And this will take some time. And the world will look differently after we have gone through this transition process.
And what we're seeing in the world today, I think, is we're on the brink of a dramatic change where we are about to, and I'll say this boldly, we're about to abandon the traditional system of money and accounting and introduce a new one. And the new one, the new accounting, is what we call blockchain.
Not the...
So let's pause there for a second. We're about to abandon the system of money that we have and go into a new one, blockchain. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about this a little bit earlier. So it goes directly from this person through the different systems and avenues to the other individual. And we'll have a diagram showing that. Now, she said in accounting too, because if you think about it, why do you have an accounting department for a company, for a business, for whatever? And that's to keep track of everything. But you don't need to do that anymore because they're in control of all of that. Mm-hmm. It goes straight from here to there. Whatever time is put in here, the carbon credits are added automatically, mm-hmm. the monetary value is added automatically, and it goes to their main motherboard mm-hmm. system, you mm-hmm. could call it.
Sure.
And just goes straight to the individual.
Yeah.
So it's bypassing all the structure that we have now,
yep.
which makes cash an anti-system.
Yeah, because you don't need the physical cash to make the transfers anymore. And in fact, that's what the Internet of Things, that's what the phrase the Internet of Things comes, because now there are going to be sensors on your phone, sensors on your car, sensors on the machines that make the goods. So normally you'd say on your tax form, we made this much, we sold this much, and then if they want to audit you, they could come check.
Yep.
But now the sensors on the machines will tell them exactly how much you made, exactly yep. how much went at the door, and it taxes it at the moment that it's produced.
Yep.
So there's no delay between the product being produced and sold and the tax collected for it. It's real-time tax collection, surveillance, in the moment with the Google Analytics dashboard to actually read out what you have, which before AI and before blockchain was not even possible, not even on the list.
And the funny thing about the blockchain, a lot of people thought this was a way to get away from the control.
Yeah.
And they put it out there, right? You had Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, all these early yep. like ones that people started going on or mining for, mm-hmm. and it seemed innocent. Okay, how are you mining this? Nobody really understood the point of mining and what mining was actually doing, and that's a whole separate topic.
Yeah,
because I did look into that mm-hmm. realm early on, and what you're doing is you're creating the computing system for AI. That's what you're mining. Mm-hmm. So the AI has questions. It has problems, and you are solving those problems. That's your mining. Mm-hmm. And the solution that's given is the answer to this block of information. Mm-hmm. So you're adding in, and you as a contributor to the mining process is actually developing this AI structure, mm-hmm. this open source AI structure that is on everyone's computer. It's not one location
right,
anymore.
It's decentralized and distributed.
But it's funny, it's decentralized. At the same time, it creates this common good structure.
Yeah, it's a common ledger with everything on it. Absolutely right. And so, yeah, you have what was initially pitched as this like breaking free from the system, but this is how the devil works.
Yeah.
Right. He sets it up to make it look like, you know, when we'll maybe touch on Bitcoin in the future, the developer of it, Satoshi Nakamoto, when you translate that into English, it translates into central intelligence. So I don't know why people haven't looked at what the meaning of those two names are, but the first one, Satoshi, is intelligence, and the last name, Nakamoto, is central. So central intelligence, and this is where the NSA, CIA, these groups are involved in the helping break down the walls for people to accept the concept of digital currency. So when you had Bitcoin be a nothing and now it's worth like $30,000 per coin, you now have broken kind of the threshold of the initial use case, even though it doesn't have any practical application other than what people have value for it. There are going to be digital assets in the future that act as like the moving around in this new financial system.
Every monetary system that I'm speaking about, the new one, we built a new set of rails, and I think the BIS has spoken about a unified global platform or infrastructure.
So he said, we build a new set of rails. And imagine, like, when people ask me how to describe this, imagine the current structure is like two guys on a railway track, and they're doing one of these. You're on that side, we're going here. And now the new rails are the high-speed levitation trains that they use in Asia that go 300-plus miles an hour. Think of the difference, like a quantum shift.
Yeah.
And this difference is like doing for communication, like what email did for communication, it's going to do to the whole financial world. So when we're talking about thinking about what was life before the internet, what was life before email, people will say, what was life before blockchain? Yeah. So it gives kind of this mass scale of how impactful this is. And now he said after that there would be a unified ledger. Most of what people are going to hear about this technology at this stage is about distributed ledger technology. Yeah. Multiple ledgers all over the place, which is true. But then those ledgers get taken to a master ledger, a unified ledger, where literally all transactions, everything, all carbon, whatever aspect they want to use the blockchain for, and we'll look a little bit about that later, they'll be able to use this technology to do that. And here, I didn't put on here, but this is the current head of the Bank of International Settlements. Actually, no, she's the current head of the International Monetary Fund. And so carrying off what the last guy said, she's going to talk about this new global framework that they're working on.
That if we are to be successful, CBDCs could not be fragmented national propositions. To have transactions more efficient and fairer, we need systems that connect countries. In other words, we need interoperability.
So they pitch a lot of this system to be helping the unbanked. It's going to be more fair. The correspondent banking giants like JP Morgan and these guys won't be at the head anymore. It will now be a fair, more equitable world.
Yeah.
So a lot of this stuff is pitched to us based on the good sounding things. And if we didn't have a fallen world, a lot of these things could be used for very positive things. But just like splitting the atom led to the atom bomb, it was a great breakthrough. But how do we use the technology? And it's been their goal from the beginning, interoperability, getting everything to talk to each other, all data sets from different sources being able to be put into one central system. That just means unified surveillance.
Which means that they can determine again where that is going to go and what you can use it for.
Yes. And again, like Laudato Si or Economy of Francis, this is all centralized religious control in the form of various technology and functions.
Yeah. And for this reason, at the IMF, we are working hard on the concept of a global CBDC platform.
For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who's using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also, we will have the technology to enforce that.
Yeah, there you go. So they will determine what that can be used for. Yeah. They can program that in. If you're allowed to use it here, there, and what they determine, because they own it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, they own their central bank digital currency. So each region would have its own central bank digital currency, and then that region would be able to determine what the rules were. But as they do now, the central banks coordinate and they talk. One lowers their rates, the other tends to lower. One raises, the other tends to raise. So we see there's coordination between those entities. And even within that, like, who is the World Bank? Who is the International Monetary Fund? Who is the Bank of International Settlements? Do they have individual users as their top priority? And certainly not. So you start to look at these transnational financial organizations having a tremendous push on how, even down to your and my wallets, how we can now use and spend money. And so more and more, we're seeing this push towards justifying the use of central bank digital currencies. And we're going to see in a little bit, maybe an event that could happen that could really act as a catalyst for people accepting this, where right now maybe they are not interested in accepting it.
The one final note I will make is that if you think about the benefits of digital money, there are huge potential gains. It's not just about digital forms of physical currency. You can have programmability, you know, units of central bank currency with expiry dates. You could have, as I argue in my book, a potentially better, and some people might see it, or a darker world where the government decides that units of central bank money can be used to purchase some things, but not other things that it deems less desirable, like, say, ammunition or drugs or pornography or something.
So he said a couple things here. It has the programmability. And also, you can add expiry. So if you don't utilize that money with a certain amount of time, it's going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say we know these things are going to take place. They're telling us that these things are going to take place, and biblically we can see that these are going to take place. So we'll talk about this in another episode, but we really promote people to be self-sustaining so that when this comes along, that you actually have something that you can do to sustain yourself. If you are not in that position at a certain point in time, and you're trying to save up, and they start implementing dates that you will lose
your currency. Expiration
dates.
There's no saving.
Or a negative interest rate, we are talking about,
mm-hmm.
Where each month you're losing if you don't use it on these certain things that they program is okay.
Yeah.
There's not even a way to get out of the system.
No.
They trap you there.
It's a trap. And just so people know, this isn't just some quack who wrote a book. This guy is the former head of the International Monetary Fund's China division. And we know how China has done with their surveillance state. We're actually going to look at an example of that here. But his name's Eswar Prasad. And so it's not just some random person. This is the head of economic policy and was the International Monetary Fund's lead for China on the implementation of these things, which I find curious because they're so far advanced on the distribution of their digital currency and the programmability that's already being used and the social credit scores. Again, a real world use case.
Yep.
People who you'd say before, oh, this conspiracy.
It's like a test area.
It is.
For the rest of the world.
And we know that the Jesuits have made claim to running China since the 16th century, maybe even the 15th century, that they have clearly use China as their main testing ground to take this as the system as far as possible. And like for anybody who's being like, oh, this isn't true, go look at what the Chinese citizens have to do using WeChat and using facial recognition and using all of these things, their social credit scores that stop them from buying plane tickets and bus tickets. And this is very real what's happening already. And so when this guy's talking about these things, this is not some dystopian future. These aspects are in some places already being used.
Yeah. And like he said, they will be able to limit that use to what they want and exclude things. And he throws some things
categories
in that aren't important there. But one is like ammunition, or maybe it will be country living tools like gardening tools or, you know, anything like this that they say, you know what? No, we don't approve of that because... Well, this goes back to even in the States right now, there's certain areas you're not allowed to have a garden because it's dangerous for people to grow their own food mm-hmm. because maybe they're introducing, you know, bacteria or things or whatever.
Yeah, they could make any justification they wanted, really.
And so they say, no, we're going to X you off of these things because that's dangerous for the common good. We want only the approved growers, the approved this, and... You know, it's probably going to be AI robots making this fake grown meat, weird things, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Or another thing that's being promoted very heavily is the insects.
Mm-hmm.
So crickets and other food sources,
yep.
Which is actually growing quite substantially.
Yeah.
It's not this And I've known about this for probably around 10 years. These people who used to produce for the reptile industry, so people who have pet reptiles and they're growing crickets and mealworms and these different things, found there was more money in the people market than in the reptile market. So they swapped over, and now they're organic, you know, cricket, you know, barbecued crickets or mealworms or whatever it may, you know, black soldier fly larva or something. So this is what they're really shifting to. You own nothing, be happy eating bugs and whatever else that we determine that is sustainable for you.
Yeah.
And this sustainable thing, again, is amazing. This is even promoted on, you know, TV series that you would say is totally disconnected from this. Even cooking shows. Oh, we're going to have a challenge today on sustainable food. And it includes crickets, and it includes, you know, all these different things. So this is being, you know, slowly propagated and promoted to people's minds that this is what sustainable looks like.
Yeah.
And how is a cricket more sustainable than potatoes or more sustainable than wheat is just mind-boggling to me.
It really is. And again, the extent of how much, like, it's going so far in the, like, obscenely ridiculous direction, we don't know with the shift towards conservatism if the, the bug eating will continue. But it just shows how far they're willing to go if this power continues to be unchecked. But regardless, like, the shift towards more control, less privacy, and the centralization of power seems to be the main narrative that we're hearing in this.
Yeah.
And that is very powerful in terms of the use of a CBDC.
Where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on.
Well, as Stefan said, that we'd ever learn, and maybe the only times where we do learn temporarily is from, in financial terms anyway, is when we have a crisis. So I guess I'm interested in any of you, whether you think this will require a crisis involving stable coins, and if so, how imminent is that kind of car crash in this world, or are we still at the very early stages that we couldn't really have a car crash quite yet?
We'll have a car crash, but not quite yet. And I think it's only when we have the car crash that this will get a lot of attention.
And I'll just say, when you watch the other characters up here, and they, when she starts talking about this crash, they all get very, like, strange. And when he says we're going to have a crash, one guy's like, "Ugh, don't say anymore." You know, the guy in the middle at the top, he's kind of puts his hand up, like, "Okay, enough." So there's definitely, as we've seen, this is not a far stretch to say, historically, they often use crises to get the catalyst going. And here they're almost talking about it as like, hey, we actually aren't going to get the adoption we need without the crisis. And all this was done post health pandemic, post Russian-Ukraine war. This is all like early March 2022 up in the right-hand corner, the Bank of International Settlements Innovation Summit. So they're expecting this. And that's why I think they've taken monetary policy, where inflation's gotten so crazy. All the stimulus money, they printed 40% of dollars ever created in like a 24-month period, and now we're seeing an explosion in hyperinflation. That is most likely going to have repercussions, and we're seeing it with the collapse of banks, and there's like a liquidity issues. And I think we're going to see more and more of these liquidity issues on banks holding all this debt, that it's going to cause this crash. And the way that they're going to save everybody, then make everybody whole again, is the introduction of this new blockchain technology.
They're going to create a crisis or use a crisis to become the hero.
Yeah. And they say, oh, we've got the answer to save the day. Yeah. And we can send out new stimulus using something called digital dollars, which we're going to look at in the next episode. So let's keep carrying forward. So now we're working through our chart here. And we're seeing very clearly that there is this shift coming, that the financial system seems to be at the focus. And we saw like President Biden even in there as part of this. And when you look at the kind of the governmental bodies, you see the Jesuit order, the Vatican, are over the American governments. They're over the United Nations, the BRICS nations, the G7, and the G20. And I just kind of want to take a look at why we say that. Because right now, of just currently of the G20 leaders, forget even going back in the past and seeing how many have been Catholic leaders in the past. You've got almost half the G20 being led by a Roman Catholic. You've got most of the major Fed central banking entities being Roman Catholic.
Yep.
And even 7 of 9 Supreme Court justices, which is the highest law interpreting body in the United States. So if all these share the same worldview, what's the likelihood that that view is going to be implemented into the policymaking? And when people say, well, why does it matter if these people are practicing Catholics or not? And it all comes down to the idea that the confessional is one of the greatest intelligence gathering tools the world has ever seen. Because we know the king is the pope is the king of a civil monarchy that's acknowledged by governments, it would be like having Chinese foreign agents or Russian foreign agents getting all the personal secrets and thoughts of these world leaders. And when even the average priest, you don't have to be the pope to be above a world leader, because here it says, these are quotes from the catechism. It says, since Christ entrusted to his apostles the ministry of reconciliation, bishops who are their successors and priests, the bishop's collaborators continue to exercise this ministry. Indeed, bishops and priests, by virtue of the sacraments of holy orders, have the power to forgive all sins.
And if you can forgive sins, you are over this person.
Exactly. You are, regardless of how powerful you are politically, if you can forgive someone's sins and get them through to heaven, you are pretty much the highest power on earth. Yep. I mean, because Jesus is the only one who can actually forgive the sins. And when we saw how the people reacted when he alluded to as such, they went crazy. They ripped their clothes. This is blasphemy, basically. And so we see then it's not just that the priests have the power to do this and the bishops, but that all members are supposed to take, which is the sacraments of penance, which is the same thing as confession, is for all sinful members of his church. So all of these people practicing Catholics are going regularly to confess all of these things. Imagine state secrets and personal things that could be used for blackmail or whatever. Mm-hmm. This is one of the main reasons why Protestants historically have had such a problem with Catholics in high position of powers in foreign governments. They want to take positions at the Vatican, be my guest. But being in another country and taking that leadership position, well, it causes a real conflict of interest. And people historically have had legitimate concerns about this.
You wouldn't let a Nazi in Israel's government.
No, nor, nor would you of any enemy of your country. And I think it's very clear through encyclical writings and many social Catholic social teachings and teachers that they hate the Bill of Rights. They hate the Constitution. So why would you have somebody who hate the very basis of how your country was founded want them to be basically above your leaders? So on the left-hand side, we see academia, confessional, and religious orders. And we kind of looked at how the confessional could play a role in influencing those leaders of the governments. Then you have from academia. Now, the Catholic system has more schools around the world than any other single organization on planet Earth. In the United States alone, they have 1,200 Catholic high schools. They have over 200 Catholic universities and colleges, and over 28 of them are Jesuit universities. And we see, as an example, Brett Kavanaugh, Neil Gorsuch, two Supreme Court justices, and Jerome Powell, they all attended the same Jesuit prep school. What do you think the statistical probability is that they all go to the same prep school and they're in such powerful positions today when there's only 9 seats at the Supreme Court? There's only 1 seat at the Federal Reserve chair head, and they all found themselves in those positions. So we see very clearly that these orders and these academic institutions,
these people are selected for a reason.
And that's smart.
It's not just random.
No. Imagine if you wanted to influence policy in the future. Starting schools is a genius way to go about it, because not only do you train them from a young age in the mindset you want, but you take the best and the brightest and you've got your hand picking on how to cultivate them and put them in the right positions of power. Another example is the Catholic orders, whether they're internally as part of the religious organization or whether they're lay organizations like Knights of Columbus. There's over 1,000 of these. And examples of how those people in positions of power are really in the United States today, William Barr was the former Department of Justice head twice for 2 different administrations, and he's a Knights of Columbus member. And then you have Gavin Newsom, who's the governor of California, which is the sixth largest economy in the world. You know, recently, the Chinese government, President Xi, he refused to meet with state heads of the U.S. government. But he just met with Gavin Newsom, and they sat down and talked together. And one of the scariest things about California is it matches more and more of China's policy than you could ever imagine. And the common link for them is the Jesuit order.
Well, they're removing rights for rain collection, for gardens, all these kinds of things
Ridiculous things that we're talking about. Yeah.
Is being implemented there right now.
Yes. And so it's fascinating to me that the Jesuits say they control China. Gavin Newsom went to Jesuit schooling, and the guy before him, he actually was going to be a Jesuit priest. So the last two governors were deeply involved with the Jesuit order. Jerry Brown was the previous governor, and he literally, before political career, went to go become a Jesuit priest. So how intricate are they connected? And to see him go over and meet with Xi, and that Xi would meet with him, that's very telling of how deep that order
is. And the Jesuit, going back to the Jesuit oath, they're supposed to play every role perfectly.
Yeah.
So whatever they're told to do, they will do that role perfectly. So you would not even know.
And we'll look at the future about the role of Ignatian spiritual exercises in the process of brainwashing someone to give up their free will.
Yeah.
It's a very fascinating look. Okay, so now we see academia, the confessional, and the religious orders have a huge influence in the governmental bodies. But if you look on the right-hand side, so do the think tanks.
Because we've covered these guys before.
Yeah.
The Club of Rome, the Bilderbergs, and others.
Yeah, we talked about Heritage Foundation in the most recent episodes. So when we look at think tanks and what their role is, it's very clearly in the facet of policymaking. It says think tanks' main output, policy expertise, either in the form of concrete proposals. So like when you see these large bills that get there, it's not the senators sitting down there and at their computers and writing these things up.
For months.
Yeah, they're generally done prior through one of these think tanks. And then it goes through the staff's editing process. And they move this and they change that and they change the wording here. But the bulk of the work is done by these think tanks. And so it's either the concrete proposals or the blue sky thinking. And it's underpinned by claims that it is evidence-based. The widely used Prevost notion of evidence-based policymaking has been a benefit to think tanks as organizations that claim to speak truth to power by producing easily digestible outputs aimed at policymakers who profess to want evidence to make policy that works.
And I want to just point out, it says, claims that it is evidence-based. So it's not always the evidence that we would think is necessary.
Yeah.
But it's claimed evidence.
Yeah. And we have two examples that we actually just covered in this. So the role of think tanks using evidence-based information to create proposals. The first one we looked at was that the whole climate change narrative came from the Club of Rome and probably even prior to Club of Rome, because they had to be kind of, hey, we need a new enemy to unite us. Somebody had to come to them and tell them that. And I believe that was the role of the Jesuit order and the papacy. And so then you have in this one, in 1991, breaking down that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, that would fit the bill. But then as recently as just a couple weeks ago with this, you have another think tank that's also from a Catholic viewpoint saying, no, we need to unwind the policies and procedures that are used to advance radical gender, racial, and equity initiatives under the banner of science. So the think tanks are playing a very prominent role in the policy making of nations and have been for a long time. The first one we looked at, Club of Rome, which is the left, and the Heritage, which is the right, they both played their roles in the dialogue we're seeing today, even though that first quote was from 1991. So these are played out over decades.
Yeah.
And they understand what role, where they're trying to get to, what's the end goal, and it's about worship and Satan, getting the world to worship him. So now we're kind of moving. We've covered all the top levels. Now we're kind of moving down to this lower level here where we have government agencies, NGOs, non-governmental organizations, central banks and FIs, financial institutions, and public and private partnerships. And we see on the public and private partnership side that Pope Francis has been integrated with these CEOs of Fortune 500 companies to get them to create this more equitable economy. He says the CEOs of Bank of America, Visa, EY, BP, Johnson & Johnson, Salesforce, and several other Fortune 500 companies are joining forces with Pope Francis to promote a more inclusive form of capitalism. Inclusive capitalism.
Yeah.
You own nothing and you're happy. And again, we see how this trickles down. Now it's going into the very companies that you engage, you and I engage mm-hmm. with, and what you spend your money on subscriptions for, and how you run your business, like through Salesforce. This is not the first time the Pope has taken a strong stance against capitalism. So again, he's trying to attack the basis of the economy that has been prosperous for so many people. Now, we're not saying capitalism is perfect and everybody's great in it, but it has led to the conditions of the most prosperity for the most people in history. So when we look at some of the top guys, we touched on Larry Fink, when we're looking at the public and private partnership that's going on, BlackRock plays a massive role.
Yeah.
And here they're saying...
And they've been... people have been talking about them a lot lately.
Yeah.
Especially people who are a little bit awake to some of the behind-the-scenes happenings. But BlackRock is a huge organization.
Absolutely.
Huge. Probably the largest.
Yeah, they're one of the largest private equity holders in the planet, in the trillions of dollars. And when we're looking at the amount that they have their hands in, it's quite substantial. And he's saying that this stakeholder capitalism is not woke. Stakeholder capitalism is inclusive capitalism. It's the same thing. And I have a couple key points about stakeholder capitalism, because that's just a word for most people. But really, what stakeholder capitalism allows to do is allows the papacy to subtly shift the focus from individual rights and traditional capitalist values to that of more of the common good. And they do this by getting these companies to implement these stakeholder ideologies. Yeah. It essentially helps get rid of the middle class by creating this dependence on like centralized entities to get approval. So let's say you wanted to start a company and you wanted to have BlackRock fund you. BlackRock won't touch you unless you meet every single one of the sustainable development goals. And because it's not just BlackRock, but all the companies BlackRock owns, if any one of those companies you try to go engage with, they now can say, no, we won't work with you unless you implement these specific things. So this will erode the middle class, because now the cost and the barrier to entry to get in is become so much higher and more difficult that people won't be able to start companies that are now lucrative, because there's so many things attached that it eventually stops the ability of anyone but like a BlackRock or a larger corporation. And we're seeing that with the consolidation of banks and companies being eaten up by the bigger guys.
And people might remember in some of the earlier episodes where we were talking about the Club of Rome and sort of their future outlook. This was predicted really by them.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a distinction between the low class, middle class, high class, even the very well-off, or you could say richer class, and the elites, right? Mm-hmm. These are not the same category.
Right.
So every time they're saying it's going to be more fair, they're not talking about the elite groups of people. These are a separate category. These are the leaders, the kings, right, over what they're determining will be fair. So they're going to take that gap and they're going to squish it all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
But BlackRock is not part of that. You know, these huge organizations that are actually driving this, people think that they will be affected too. And somehow that it's a good thing if we remove all big companies, which mm-hmm. is not actually a benefit. But that's a whole different conversation. But these companies that are backed by these elites, what they call themselves, mm-hmm. right, are not affected by these policies. They're not affected by these changes.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones in control of the process itself.
Yeah. Yeah. And it always trickles down. The cost always trickles down to the taxpayer. They're always the one eating the bill, whether it's cost of goods increasing, tax increases. It's just it's the attack on the middle class, which the papacy has hated since its inception. And we see that there are articles showing, is Larry Fink a threat to democracy because of these tyrannical ESG goals. Now, there has been some narrative of BlackRock backing off of these things, because at the end of the day, sometimes the most extreme version isn't really what they're going for. Mm-hmm. They're just looking for the synthesis. So we're not saying that every piece of this is happening to the fullest, but what we're seeing is they're using the narrative to stimulate this transition to get what they really want, which is centralized religious control at some point. And so as we kind of go through the last couple pieces here, we're just going to quickly peek at what the central banks are doing. And we saw in some of those videos, they're building what we see is the IMF is building a global central bank digital currency platform. And they say it's to increase transparency. But really what we're looking at is centralized control, which is strange in what they're calling a decentralized and distributed world. Yeah. What it's creating is a immutable, unchangeable record of everything. And at that point, now you can monitor and control like never before. We're seeing the BIS is actually rolling this out. This one particular one's called Project Icebreaker from March of 2023, where they actually have been experimenting the launch of these real world use cases and seeing how they play out. This is no longer just on the page. It's now coming off and being tested in real life. And just to kind of give people an idea, there's a lot of different projects. They're all coming together to make this a reality. They have Project Polaris, Project Aurora, Project Mariana, Project Mandala, which is an interesting word in and of itself. And all of these different things are being really exercised and practiced and put into place right now because the transition is coming very near. They say it's a common platform that's being used around the world as a public good. So again, it's a narrative of the common good. We need this for the help of everything. In order to help the poor, in order to get rid of poverty and hunger, which are the UN goals, we've got to put this platform into action.
And the only way it's decentralized is that it's involving everybody. Mm-hmm. But really, there's still a core group of people. A machine doesn't run unless you have someone running it. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, like they said, it's a common platform, but it's not commonly controlled. Yep. It's not... You know, we the people with our rights.
Right.
It's this system, and then we will distribute that in the way that we see is fair and the way that is good for everyone.
That's right. Like, even though it's distributed, everyone that's distributed still has to follow the rules that they make in order for it to operate in the system. And it's not currently set up fully like
that. You don't get
to
program your CBDC currency what you want it to be used for.
Right.
They do that for you.
Right. And that's what this platform does. So they're giving countries the ability to do this. And I wanted to help people get visualization of what this actually looks like, because it's kind of hard to picture. But if you look, as kind of say this is the major world economies and how they would operate. On the right-hand side, you have all of the normal payment platforms and companies that you'd see, Facebook and Amazon and PayPal and Tesla and Apple. But as you see, as the money runs through those groups, all they do is go through their corresponding banking partners.
Yeah.
And then if you look on the other side, here are the actual countries that you have. You have Japan, the EU, the US, the UK, and China. And those on a national level, forget the private side, but more the public national level, have their payment systems.
Yeah.
And where they meet in the middle is that middle XRP ledger. Now, I don't know if it'll be an XRP ledger, some version. There will be a main ledger where all of these things go through. Where before blockchain and before this new industrial revolution stuff, this was not possible to get all of these different groups, which were in their own kind of bubbles and then kind of operating. You can now see everything centralized in one basically motherboard.
And that's how they're portraying this even as a good thing. Oh, you'll be able to transfer from this country to that country. And people are already talking about that.
Yeah.
You know, big business guys. Oh, I keep blockchain, you know, currency because I can send a transfer here and it's just like this.
Yep.
There's no delay. And that's the way that if you build a highway that's easier to travel on, people will go on.
Exactly. You've got a bumpy road with all these potholes and everything, and then you've got a nice, smooth, paved road that's very fast and easy on your car. Your car doesn't break down as much. Of course, people are going to use this new road. So the tech is very, very good. It could be very, very beneficial. But of course, we live in a fallen
world.
There's
a toll on this road.
There is a massive toll, and you never know what it's going to be and how much and all the other stipulations, but that's a good way to put it. It's like a toll. And so that's kind of to give people an understanding of how all these things connect together. It's putting that brain in the middle that is really what they've been going for. And if we actually zoom into the American portion of this whole thing, this is where something like FedNow, you know, we've kind of waited a while to talk about FedNow, but FedNow is really just a piece in a much larger puzzle. And if we kind of can see how this works, there's Matt on this side, Mackenzie on the other side. I send you $100, you get the $100 instantly, and it's, we don't really think about the in-between. Yeah. But what you have is, from whether it's individuals all the way up to corporations, all these payment providers that are taking in all of these payments that are now being sent through what's called the FedNow Master Account. And all of this happens where previously this did not occur. Now every transaction that goes through any organization in the United States ends up going through this FedNow system. Yeah. So it's centralized control again. And if we're looking at no buy, no sell systems, I remember thinking for the longest time, how could this possibly be? Well, hopefully our audience is starting to see how this can be possible now. Because blockchain technology, and we're going to get into that more in the next episode, has really allowed these pieces to become centralized, to pass through one central portal. And this hopefully gives people an idea of what that actually looks like. And it actually is kind of crazy. They use the infinity sign. Mm-hmm. And there's all sorts of occultism in the language they use in how this works. But they're showing that it's a 365, 24/7 component where normal banking, you had banking hours. They would close on the weekends, holidays, no more. This will have 24/7, 365, instant real-time financial transaction monitoring.
And with that comes the tracing of everything.
Everything.
Because it doesn't go from anyone to anyone without all of that being tracked.
Exactly.
It goes through the FedNow Master Account, through whatever mechanism that is. So you have $100 in your account, and you're going to purchase whatever it may be that they determine is maybe on like a list of precurious items. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then they're keeping track of that.
Yep.
And then once you get to a certain level, maybe you'll have a knock on your door, say, hey, you know, you've been purchasing a lot of these, you know, type of goods. You've been doing this, or you just get a notification that says, okay, you're suspended for X amount of time.
Exactly. And you get a notification on your phone saying your social credit score is not high enough to buy this product.
Sorry.
You have plenty of money, let's say, in this instance, but you can't even use it because mm-hmm. there's so much restrictions on it. So this is what this new system allows for. And in the next episode, we're going to start focusing on kind of the lower pieces. What is blockchain? How does artificial intelligence play into this whole thing? What about smart cities, smart cars? And it all comes down to understanding Web 1, Web 2, and Web 3. And we are in this final evolution of Web 3, which is now the tokenization and artificial intelligence, this blockchain technology. And we'll look more into this. But we just want people to know this is all about understanding that the no buy, no sell system is real, that it's closer than ever, that it's the pieces. This is no longer on the page. It's mm-hmm. off the page and in the world. And the Lord has told us that he's going to make everything known. There's people out there that are like, oh, if this needs to be exposed and we need whatever realm it's in, it says, for nothing is secret that shall not be made manifest, neither anything hid that shall not be made known and come abroad. So God's telling us in advance that he's going to expose everything. There will be justice served. And while we know there will be tribulation, we know that Jesus has overcome in this tribulation. Yeah. It's not our battle to fight in the sense that we're going to do it with our own might. All we can do is be instruments of the Most High God with the character of God in doing that. And then we share in his victory because it's not our victory, it's his victory. And it's not like he's waiting to win. He's already won. He won at the cross. And now it's our victory to take hold. And we don't have to worry or be afraid of these things, because I have a feeling there's some people that watch this, they're going to be like, wow,
or it's don't even want to watch it.
That's true.
Because it's so fearful.
Yeah.
But he's the fourth man in the furnace, referring back to the three worthies. Nebuchadnezzar seen someone else in there that looked like the Son of God. The Bible doesn't promise that we'll be removed from all tribulation, but it says, as you're going through the valley of the shadow of death, I will bring you through that.
Yes.
So we have to go through that. That's part of the refining process. That's part of the faith building process. Are you willing to follow me wherever I go?
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean we should be fearful. We should not be fearful. We have the promises that are in the Word of God that He will only do to us what is for our best interest.
Yeah.
And if we believe that, we just need to move forward. We need to be aware of what's happening. We need to be aware that prophecy is fulfilling. God gives us that for reasons so that we can see the Bible is true and that we can be ready for the things that are about to come on this world.
Amen. And we hope that people listening don't get wrapped up in how serious and intense this is and lose sight of how much Jesus has paid for them to get through this, to look to Jesus and not to the world.
Yeah.
And hopefully that this helps people, give them confidence that they can go to the Bible, because it's already told us of this no buy, no sell system. Regardless of if you know the details or not, you can trust Christ to get you through these things.
And on that same note, to keep up to date, make sure you join our newsletters. We have events, we have prophecy report, we have a daily Bible verse that gives you encouraging thought with a quote that goes along with that Bible verse.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to there. I believe it's welcome.amazingdiscoveries.org.
Mm-hmm.
We have a newsletter, and we do appreciate all your support, whether that be prayers or financial support. Mm-hmm. And please like and share these videos. Comment any questions or thoughts that you have. Contact our office with any information that you would like to get a hold of that can help you be more understanding on all these topics and be more ready.
And use ADTV.watch. Don't use YouTube.
Yes.
It's such a better experience if you haven't gone there. I know we kind of talk about it at the beginning or end of each episode, but just go there. Just go try it. Go to ADTV.watch, create an account, watch the same video or the next video on that platform and start making bookmarks. I have a feeling you guys will never go back to YouTube again.
And please support that project, because that enables us to get information out to you guys.
Yep.
That isn't going to be censored. So there's videos we have there that aren't on our YouTube channel because they can't be.
Yeah.
So please go there, watch there, support the progress we're trying to do, because we're adding things all the time.
Yep.
There's new tools coming all the time. We're going to be having amazing study tools that people can study with.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there's going to be online courses that we're going to be introducing. That's probably the first time some people are hearing this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very exciting, the things that we're trying to do.
And we built it for you guys. We didn't build it for ourselves. You know, we use it, but we built it for the audience. We built it so people have another step to take in their witnessing efforts. And we didn't do this just so nobody would use it. We really think it could be a benefit for the world. So we're inviting you, and there's no charge to use it. There's no charge to make an account. Everything is free. Everything we give, we don't charge. We just ask for your support if you find it valuable.
Thank you for watching, and we will see you in part two of the No Buy, No Sell series. We'll see you in the next video.